entrust to this person any secret, for it might be blabbed out when the man was in his cups. This is a fallacy, for the first syllogism refers to him who is actually drunk, and not to him who is about to get drunk. You will surely admit that there is a great difference between a man who is drunk and a drunkard. He who is actually drunk may be in this state for the first time and may not have the habit, while the drunkard is often free from drunkenness. I therefore interpret the word in its usual meaning, especially since the syllogism is set up by a man who makes a business of the careful use of words and who weighs his language. Moreover, if this is what Zeno meant, and what he wished it to mean to us, he was trying to avail himself of an equivocal word in order to work in a fallacy. And no man ought to do this when truth is the object of inquiry. But let us admit, indeed, that he meant what Posidonius says. Even so, the conclusion is false, that secrets are not entrusted to an habitual drunkard. Think how many soldiers who are not always sober have been entrusted by a general or a captain or a centurion with messages which might not be divulged. With regard to the notorious plot to murder Gaius Caesar, I mean the Caesar who conquered Pompey and got control of the state, Tullius Cimber was trusted with it no less than Gaius Cassius. Now Cassius, throughout his life, drank water, while Tullius Cimber was a sot as well as a brawler. Cimber himself alluded to this fact, saying, "I carry a master? I cannot carry my liquor." So, let each one call to mind those who, to his knowledge, can be ill-trusted with wine, but well-trusted with the spoken word. And yet, one case occurs to my mind, which I shall relate, lest it fall into oblivion. For life should be provided with conspicuous illustrations. Let us not always be harking back to the dim past. Lucius Piso, the director of public safety at Rome, was drunk from the very first time of his appointment. He used to spend the greater part of the night at banquets, and would sleep until noon. That was the way he spent his morning hours. Nevertheless, he applied himself most diligently to his official duties, which included the guardianship of the city. Even the sainted Augustus trusted him with secret orders when he placed him in command of Thrace. Piso conquered that country. Tiberius, too, trusted him when he took his holiday in Campania, leaving behind him in the city many a critical matter that aroused both suspicion and hatred. I fancy that it was because Piso's drunkenness turned out well for the emperor that he appointed to the office of city prefect Cosus, a man of authority and balance. But so soaked and steeped in drink that once, at a meeting of the Senate, whither he had come after banqueting, he was overcome by a slumber from which he could not be roused, and had to be carried home. It was to this man that Tiberius sent many orders written in his own hand, orders which he believed he ought not to trust even to the officials of his household. Cosus never let a single secret slip out, whether personal or public. So let us abolish all such harangues as this. No man, in the bonds of drunkenness, has power over his soul, as the very vats are burst by new wine, and as the dregs at the bottom are raised to the surface by the strength of the fermentation, so, when the wine effervesces, whatever lies hidden below is brought up and made visible. As a man overcome by liquor cannot keep down his food when he has overindulged in wine, so he cannot keep back a secret either. He pours forth impartially both his own secrets and those of other persons. This, of course, is what commonly happens, but so does this, that we take counsel on serious subjects with those whom we know to be in the habit of drinking freely. Therefore, this proposition, which is laid down in the guise of a defense of Zeno's syllogism, is false, that secrets are not entrusted to the habitual drunkard. How much better it is to arraign drunkenness frankly and to expose its vices. For even the middling good man avoids them, not to mention the perfect sage, who is satisfied with slaking his thirst. The sage, even if now and then he is led on by good cheer, which, for a friend's sake, is carried somewhat too far, yet always stops short of drunkenness. We shall investigate later the question whether the mind of the sage is upset by too much wine and commits follies like those of the toper. But meanwhile, if you wish to prove that a good man ought not to get drunk, why work it out by logic? Show how base it is to pour down more liquor than one can carry, and not to know the capacity of one's own stomach. Show how often the drunkard does things which make him blush when he is sober. State that drunkenness is nothing but a condition of insanity purposely assumed. Prolong the drunkard's condition to several days. Will you have any doubt about his madness? Even as it is, the madness is no less, it merely lasts a shorter time. Think of Alexander.